Radio Days Africa podcast is brought to you by the Wits Radio Academy. Radio Days Africa 2020 is about to go live.
Good afternoon and welcome to day 12 of Radio Days Africa, proudly presented by Wits Radio Academy. My name is Claire Mawisa and I'll be moderating this panel today. Radio Days Africa 2020 is made possible through the generous support of the Sub-Saharan Africa Media Program of the Konrad Adenauer Foundation. Thank you so much as well to our sponsors who have made this conference possible. And our sponsors are Iono FM. Thank you so much for the podcasting and the streaming. The Abundant Media Group for sharing the conference to community radio stations on their Vivid channel. RCS Sound Software and Crossfade Studios. Thank you so much for making the online version of Radio Days Africa 2020 happen. Like I said, it is day 12, so I hope you've also registered for the remaining sessions. They're going to be good, and I'm excited about today's session. Remember, you can participate today by asking a question, and I'd love to hear what they are. So all you need to do is type in your question below in the Q&A box, in the Q box, and I will get to them in the second half of this conversation, and hopefully we can get our panelists to answer your questions. And speaking of our panelists, we have them scattered all over Africa, so I'm super excited to be speaking to them. We have Gary Strubel, who is the CEO for Future Media in Namibia. We have Davies Kabuswe, who is the executive president at Sun FM in Zambia. From the Democratic Republic of Congo, we've got Blero Kajam, who's a radio journalist with RTNC. And all the way from Nigeria, we have Jonathan Liamgon, who is the group head radio at Consolidated Media Associates. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen, and for giving me your time. What I would like to do is start off with an introduction. So if all of you, I'll ask in a particular order, if you could just introduce yourselves and tell us more about the organizations that you represent here today. I'll start with Gary, then Jonathan, then Blero, and then Davies. Just introduce yourselves and tell us the organization you work for and a little bit about that organization. Are you on mute, Gary? You're still muted.
I'll unmute.
There we go.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Claire. So Future Media is a four-station cluster here based in Windhoek in Namibia. All four radio stations are national radio stations. We have Umalunga, Fresh FM over my right shoulder, Nova, and then Radio Wave are our four brands. We cover a vast spectrum of different formats.
And we've got a brand called Sound City Radio, which is an offshoot of our highly successful contemporary brand, which would sit in the likes of the Ukozies and the Citizen Radio in Kenya. It's called Correct FM, and we've got it across their localized stations, but in different cities across the country, each operating as a standalone local station. And media, we're heavily into events. Each of these brands activates an event that runs in tandem with the brand. So essentially we see our listenership as same people manifesting or seeking fulfillment across different platforms, essentially. And we want to be there when they need that attention.
All right, you can go ahead, Davies.
Thank you very much, Claire. Davies Kabuswe is my name once again. I'm from a media house called Sun FM Zambia. We are a radio station, one of the biggest radio stations in Zambia, broadcasting on six transmission points across the country, We also have our studios are in three locations. That is the main one being in Ndola City, then the second one being in Lusaka City, which is the capital city of Zambia. And the other studios are based in Livingston, which is the tourist capital of Zambia. And also, we've recently gone into TV. So our radio is going to be an audio-visual radio, and people will be able to watch everything that we play on our radio station. And so we'll have two television streams, one which will be radio on TV, and the other one which will be specifically TV. And also, we are currently sitting on the DSTV platform, one of the few radio stations that are sitting on the DSTV and GoTV platform in Zambia. Basically that, I'm the executive president of Sun FM Radio.
Thank you, Davies. Blaireau, bonjour. I think you're still muted, Blaireau. If you could unmute yourself for your introduction.
Okay. My name is Blaireau Kajan. As you know exactly, I'm working in the state radio, the state radio and television, which is RTNC. Okay. While covering all the country, all the Democratic Republic of Congo. First of all, you are going to apologize me for my English, because I'm in a French-speaking country. I've been educated in a French-speaking country, okay? Yeah, that's what I was saying. I'm working in RTNC. I'm a journalist, I'm a reporter in RTNC. I've been working there for 1 year, okay? Before RTNC, I've been working private radios for something like even 13 years ago. I'm working in radio and television. But right now, I'm happy to share with you.
I think let's start off with you, Blaireau, actually, and just to find out about how the pandemic has affected your work. Just checking in with you, I mean, you're on the ground as a journalist. How has COVID-19 just affected how you do what you're doing?
Yeah, it has affected the work. Yes, of course, because we've been working a lot on the ground when we are reporting, but right now we're not working with the number we had before because people have to be stay home, but not to be a lot of in the studio, but not be a lot of. Well, we've been working. That's why we not capable to be in touch or to be looking for the information as we did before, you know, because of the pandemic. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And for the rest of our panelists, I mean, Jonathan, how has COVID-19 just affected how you guys are doing work and how you guys are operating there? Oh, unmute yourself, please.
Come again, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, how has it been like during the pandemic? I just want to get an idea of how it's affected how you're working.
So essentially.
Oh, no. We seem to have lost Jonathan or having. Oh, Jonathan, are you there?
Yes.
I... Okay, cool. I think we lost you with that answer.
So for us, at the onset of the pandemic, we pretty much were able to swing. Once we saw the whole thing building up, the first thing was we figured, look, not being on air, I think my video's gotten stopped.
Yes, so that's just, fine. We can hear you clearly.
So it's not from my end here. Once we saw all of the trends as they were building up in a few other places outside of the continent mostly, it became very apparent that, look, it was very, very important for us to start to think, how do we keep the stations on air? Because we know very much that of all the people who are entitled to go away from the scene, radio isn't one of those who would enjoy that benefit, if you would. So the first thing we did was to take inventory of our state of affairs from a technological point of view, and to review to figure what are the things we can do remotely. Thankfully, because we had a practice of voice tracking already that had been in place leading up to this, it was seamless to be able to just switch on to that. So once we had instantly, what I was able to do was I just had a meeting with all of my colleagues across different departments, and we looked at how work will be affected. And with the help of our colleagues from technical, instantly we're able to get links that allowed for people to be able to broadcast from home. We also took key learnings by using mobile phones. It's amazing that we're in a, people say we're in a digital age, or I think we're in a mobile devices age. The possibilities that sit in all of those things, we're able to activate them. And straight up, we didn't lose not a second of regular programming. And throughout the times we were on active lockdown, all of our on-air colleagues were able to keep things coming real time, good time, and it went smoothly. So what, how that has affected us essentially in the sense that it has made us to look deeper and look at more possibilities that exist, at least from an operational, technically operational point of view.
Great. I mean, it's 2020, Gary, and I think every year people always want to know the relevance of radio. Is it still as relevant? Why is it so important? And a question I'll pose to all of you is, why is radio so important to Africa? Why is radio so important to your area, to your region? Maybe you can even explain, what are people using the radio more for? Is it entertainment? Is it education? Is it to get information? So why radio, and why is it so important for Africa in particular?
So it was an interesting time for radio. You know, commercially it was a dreadful time, but from a radio take-up perspective, it was the COVID pandemic and the lockdowns that ensued really brought the relevance of radio home. And we've seen this already in a lot of advertising money locally that started shifting back to radio based on this. And the theory, my theory has been on two things, is that what people want when it comes to information dissemination in times of crisis, they want information quickly and they want it from a platform they trust. So Twitter's quick. No one can beat Twitter. Facebook is pretty quick. Google's pretty quick. But people are increasingly starting to realize that trust is difficult in those spaces, and that it will continue to be ever more difficult the more popular they become. Newspapers are... and traditional print media is trusted. You know, it's a thing that's been consumed for decades now, but it's just not quick. And where radio shone through this entire period, especially where geography became a problem, people couldn't buy a newspaper, they couldn't get on the streets, they were locked at home. Radio was everywhere, it was in real time, and I was hearing news from people I trusted. And more than anything, I think the critical element of radio is this element of trust. We work very hard to gain the trust of our listeners. And during times of crisis, we want to hear from people we trust. And radio's true strength came through at that point.
And Davies, you know, for you, what would you say? What is it, you know, about radio, or why is radio so important for Africa?
Yeah, thank you, Claire. First of all, like Gary, like what Gary's saying, radio is one of the media platforms that are trusted. You know, there's a lot of fake news now going around the continent, and usually the fake news is spread on social media. You find that you have a lot of you know, stories that are generated on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter, but on radio, it's rare that you're going to find presenters, announcers, you know, spreading false stories or false rumors, and it's unethical for broadcasters. So because of that trust, you find that people may see something on social, on Facebook, on Twitter, but before they can get comfortable with the news that they've seen on social media, they first wait to hear what the radio still make, and how it has affected us back here in Zambia. particularly our station, what happened is that from the onset of the pandemic, we had to streamline our operations. We had to cut our broadcast. Our broadcast was 24 hours, but we had to cut to 18 hours. So we were only running from 06 a.m. to... And that meant that we had to send people on leave just because, you know, we had to reduce the numbers. We had to work with a slim workforce. So we've had to lose some people, unfortunately, because we had to suspend some contracts. And also, we also lost income because some of our clients had to, you know, put a stop to their programs. They had to stop sponsoring programs. They had to stop advertising, and so it has affected our cash flows as well. So the pandemic has really hammered us here in Zambia, and the numbers are rising. This is a time when the government is actually thinking of going on a full lockdown because of how the numbers are rising, because people were taking it lightly, but now the situation is getting worse. So again, you can only rely on information that is coming on platforms such as radio, because on social media you find that there is a lot of wrong information that is being spread, and so you want to make sure that you are well informed and you rely on truthful information.
Yeah, I mean, Blaireau, to you now, I mean, Gary and Davies have spoken about the fact that people are trusting the information that they're hearing on radio. Is that the same in the DRC? Or, you know, are you also struggling with cases or issues of fake news? What's the situation like in the Democratic Republic of Congo?
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you. Okay, thank you. But what has been said by the two brothers of mine, journalists, is quite okay. And it's the same thing with what is happening here, is happening here in the Democratic Republic of Congo, you know. Because nowadays, you know, fake news is covering all over the world, especially all over the continent of Africa. People are not trusting anymore the information that is been given to any kind of sources of information, mainly of social media. That's the reason why people are trusting now in radio and television, because everyone can wake up in the morning and giving certain information that is not good. That's the reason why the radio remain the media that is being trusted by the people, because of first of all, it's covering all the big parts of the country. It's covering all the big parts of the cities. And with the internet that is not developed here in the Democratic Republic of Congo, fake news is not going all over the country. Okay, but the radio is going all over the
Thank you, Blaireau. I think talking now about just radio and the landscape and what radio looks like in your different regions, I'm curious to find out about how are you guys measuring success? So how are you guys measuring things like your listenership, your time spent listening, your cume? Where are you getting all of that information from? So that's what I'm extremely curious about, because I don't know if it's the same in every country or in every region, or even if we are trusting the numbers that we are getting. So Jonathan, could you explain how it happens in Nigeria when you get numbers in terms of things like QME, TSL, listenership?
Well, we pretty much use the diary system is the most famous, or is the industry standard that we use, despite its some argue it's dated, and the world has really moved on to some more advanced, more precise measuring means. So we do that, and interestingly, the data gets processed by InfoTools, which is South African, which is based out of Joburg. So the data has to travel all the way. The interesting details we're beginning to see from, because only about last month did we start to see data from the peak times of the lockdown. So the data often comes about a month behind time. So if the data is retrieved in May, you don't get to see the details until June. So exactly a month after. And so far what we've seen is there's been greater offtake in number of listeners at home. For our market, home listenership accounts for mostly over 60% of listenership, and those numbers haven't been shaken at all. But for a city like Lagos, where there's a significant number of people in traffic, which is responsible directly for TSL, for the time spent listening, because once you're stuck in traffic, you're stuck in traffic. The most you can do is go from station to one station to the other. So that went down a bit. And then in the overall level of seeking for information, some of the on-the-side data, individual data that has been collected, it has shown that people have looked forward to listening to radio for update of information. And what we saw was there was an increase in listening to radio in the onset of the pandemic, which some have explained that it had a lot to do with people seeking for more information. Because at the time, people hadn't details. A lot of things were conjecture, even from the World Health Organization. So people were grappling with their different options, and radio was one of the most certain ones. And what that helped us to do was it helped us to be able to plug in a lot of information that was verified that we had, which kept listeners coming back. So our numbers didn't drop. But ironically, for one of the few times in the history of commercial radio, numbers went up, but advertising went down.
That's interesting. Gary's nodding his head. I want to know why you're nodding your head, Gary. Is that the same thing that you
numbers went up. I think it's no math. Numbers went up because people had a reason to tune in. And people were cut off from their usual activities. And then, you know, when you look at this part of the continent where you still have infrastructural deficits, what you guys would call load shedding, it's more of a big brother of load shedding we have in some places sometimes. It goes on for longer hours. So radio is one of the most seamless means you can just, you don't, unlike data, where you have to recharge your mobile devices to get information, with radio, tiny batteries would keep you on. Some even have solar powered systems. So I think all of this, but then instantly, and this is what I think we must be prepared for, because of a lack of real time availability of data, what we saw was advertisers, once they didn't have an idea of where the world was going, they just pulled out a lot of their advertising. Straight up, we had orders canceled because people didn't know what to do. Meanwhile, on the contrary, what they should have done would have been to have flooded the market with more advertising because there was greater opportunity. But I suspect that their activities happened because they didn't have real-time data and there was no conversation happening between the media buying space and the broadcast space. We knew the numbers were up, but they just wouldn't listen.
I mean, Gary, have you found a similar situation in Namibia in terms of just, I mean, Davey's also alluded to it. I mean, people are not spending. Are people spending? What's listenership doing? Are you aware? Or how are you tracking your numbers? How are you tracking your numbers during this time? And traditionally, how would you do it anyway?
So traditionally, Namibia, it's perhaps contrast in massive stark contrast to a country like Nigeria. Very small population spread out over an enormous area. Measurement is typically a problem. They have an annual survey that gets done. but it hadn't been done for 3 years. So we were fortunate that a survey was done just towards the end of last year. So again, it's diary based and interviewed. It is quite a stringent survey, but it doesn't really, it's not really, hasn't been bought into by a lot of the broadcasters here. As a privateer, often it's better not to have numbers and back yourself on marketing as opposed to data. Coming as I do from a more formalized environment, the numbers have been good. We have about a 50% penetration into all adults of the country and about an 80% penetration into all economically active adults across our four brands. So we wanted the numbers. They came out towards the end of last year. But we've also had multiple sources. And typically, I think this will be the new normal for radio as well, as to consistently find different kinds of evidence that point to listening, because there's also different kinds of listening. So during COVID, we had incredibly active listening, but in a very different pattern to the normal day part, which would be a morning show. We typically moved our morning shows later because people were waking up later. There wasn't school and they weren't necessarily having to be in traffic. So put your morning host on 2 hours later so that people can enjoy them at home. And that led to some changes as well. We've been tracking streaming numbers. Streaming numbers are a good indicator for us of people tuning in on different platforms. And we've seen across all four brands, streaming numbers, and on two of the brands, the streaming numbers more than doubled, off already quite impressive numbers, which told us that people were also coming in that didn't necessarily have terrestrial access, but wanted the information that they knew that brand could provide. Perhaps people that had gone from the cities to traditional grounds where they didn't have reception, but were in the habit of listening to these brands. What is an interesting point to just touch on something Jonathan said was the behavior from advertisers. I think a number of major advertisers failed a big test. What a lot of advertisers did is just stop talking altogether. And what I gathered from a number of international brands is that they felt advertising was inappropriate in a time of crisis. And I think in many cases, there's some merit behind that. But I think what advertisers could have done with the same investment is they could have communicated different messages. There was so much confusion in the marketplace that endorsement from big brands, for example, around basic things like mask wearing or staying at home, or if alcohol companies, in the absence of being able to advertise alcohol, had come out and encouraged people to adopt a slightly different lifestyle during this weird period, I think that would have led to further assistance on government's efforts to get people to adhere to, you know, the very strange life that they were being asked to lead. And I think in many cases, brands were just not able to react quick enough in a smart enough way. And the knee-jerk reaction of just removing all advertising not only had a huge impact on the media sector, which the country needed, not only radio, but also print and many digital outlets. But it also had the downside of having media companies scrambling for cover as opposed to stepping up to the plate, which is what ultimately we wound up doing, but at our own cost at that point.
Davies, you mentioned, I mean, Jonathan and Gary have spoken about the fact that the advertisers have gone down or have pulled out completely. What are you then doing? You've just explained that it's affected you quite badly. You've had to let go of staff, you voice tracking. What are you, is there a strategy to get those advertisers back? Are you thinking about that? Or is it just, a matter of just waiting it out?
We've had to rely on digital convergence, if I can use that terminology. What we've done is that all our major programs, they now run on Facebook as well as YouTube. So you find that the numbers are actually going up on Facebook, because every time we are doing a streaming live streaming on Facebook, you can see the number of followers actually going up. So we've used Facebook or live streaming as a value addition to the clients that have, kind of put everything on hold. And they've been coming back because of that, because everybody was saying that, look, they don't see the need to advertise now, because people are at home, they're not, going about doing their normal business and whatnot. So how do we get to them? But you realize that nowadays everybody is on Facebook. So how do you capture that audience? How do you make sure that your client is motivated to advertise with you. So they look at your platform, they look at the numbers, and now the numbers are growing. They are forced to put something there because they also don't want to go into oblivion because of the pandemic. So they want to remain relevant. They want to remain on the face of their clientele. So they have to use any platform visible whatsoever. And so we've been using streaming as one of the ways in which we have diversified our reach, and it has worked really well for us. And then also with regard to tracking the numbers, ordinarily what we do before this pandemic came about is that every 6 months we do an internal audience audit to see who is listening to us. So what we do is we do a sample size of 100 in each and every town, city where we have got presence, and then we look for two things: listenership as well as awareness, and that gives us some kind of information on who is listening to us. But then we compare our data that we collect from from where we go and get the data from. We compare it with other independent monitoring institutions such as Ipsos and see what they are also reporting. And many times we found that the difference is not so much, so we're quite accurate with what we do. And it also helps us in our programming because then it shows us what are the preferences, what is it that people want to listen to on radio. And so during this time of the pandemic, it's been quite difficult because people cannot go out there to go and get this information. And we rely now on digital platforms such as the website. We pose a question on the website and people respond to that. And it's also helping us in getting the numbers. It's also helping us in getting feedback on the programming during this pandemic. And one of the strategies that we used during this pandemic, we actually one of the radio stations that donated to the government about $30,000 just for them to use for advertising on the dangers of the COVID-19. And so because we had also used the updates that government was giving out on our stream, that kind of gave us a lot of traffic because people wanted to know what is really going on. So every time there will be an update, we would stream it live, and you will see the numbers actually going up because people want to know what is really going on. So the pandemic has come with its own merits and demerits where advertising is concerned. There are a lot of NGOs that have come up, whereas commercial entities withdrew. Some NGOs have come up and they are pushing because they want, you know, the information about COVID to go out there. And so they're using platforms such as ours because we've got a huge reach. So where we lost from the commercial side of things, some non-government organizations came on and kind of filled the gap. But we still, in terms of how much we lost from the commercial guys and what we're getting from the NGOs, I think it's quite different. There's a huge disparity, and obviously the commercials are coming back bit by bit because at some point everybody were on complete shutdown, but now things are slowly getting back to normal. So even the cash flows are also getting better.
Okay. Now to the landscape of radio in terms of state of commercial community radio. Jonathan, what does that look like in Nigeria? And is that landscape affected by how easy or difficult it is to get a frequency? I mean, can I rock up in Nigeria and start my own radio station with my own frequency? Or is that a bit tricky?
It depends on what you come as. If you come as a superwoman, maybe. But we've got a few peculiarities industry-wise and that are local to us. So first off, alliance frequencies, they're not sitting there waiting. You have to apply, and then the application is assessed. The suitability is determined. But more importantly, there are a few places. So say, for instance, Lagos is a frequency-saturated market. At the moment, no new frequencies are coming up. And it's arguably the most vibrant radio market in the country. Has got over an average of about 40 active radio stations in the market. However, that number consists of a few that are so what you would call community-based stations. We mostly have what we call campus radio. We've got in the city of Lagos, for instance, we've got about 3 campus radios that are active. One of them has been active for quite a long time, something in the space of maybe about 15 years, thereabouts. So we've got that. We do not have public broadcasters like you have in the case of SABC. What we have are government-owned stations. And the difference being that the government owns the stations, but they pretty much exist as commercial stations as well. So they get into the market with everybody, contest for commercials with everybody, audience with everybody. They aren't in the strictest form guidelines that make that enforces for them to act and operate differently. So what you have is just difference in ownership, but same in terms of approach. Now we've got way more privately owned commercial stations across the country. One of the things that I think we need to work on is to give power and rise to the growth of community stations for all the many obvious reasons that they seek to do, which of course is first community mobilization, and then to become also a base where we can find Generation Next in terms of broadcasters that would come in to take the mantle of leadership in other aspects of broadcasting. However, there is something that continues to mitigate, which I think is the lack of indigenous technical solutions. In a country like Nigeria, for instance, we've got well over, and on the average, about over 250 active radio stations. But there isn't any local manufacturing that is happening. From the minutest button that you would press in the studio to the tiniest pin that goes up on the antenna from studio to transmission, there is nothing that is being manufactured locally. Sadly, not even continentally for most of the things we use. So we have to rely on, if your transmitter breaks down, it's either you had an active redundancy or you have to send it to Europe or to America and get it fixed. I think all of this have continued to make broadcasting so expensive because every time you have to trade in foreign exchange, then you have to deal with customs and clearance and all of the logistic nightmares. It makes it so hard, like even in this pandemic, to have local solutions where you could easily have said people will come up with a technological option that allows for broadcasting to happen in spite of the scenario. So that's essentially what I see as the challenging part of the landscape. There needs to be a reordering of how all of these things are happening.
Blaireau, I mean, you're a journalist with state media. So could you explain a little bit about that? Is it similar to what Jonathan was saying? For example, a public broadcaster or state-owned media. Could you maybe explain how you work in an environment that you work in?
Yes. Well, I'm a journalist for the public media, as you said. But what I have to do in my work, what I have to do is to give the information from the government. I have not to go out of what the government has to give. I have to rely what the government are doing like activities, and I have not to go out of that. Okay, just relying to the activities of the government. As for myself, I'm working in the parliament. Okay, I'm stuck in the parliament, provincial parliament. I have to rely all the information coming from the parliament, provincial parliament, and so on. I have not to go out of what has been given to me. Okay, the activities of the government, I'm just working on it and finish by that. I'm not to go out of that. Okay, that's what we mean by a journalist working in the what again government station.
Okay. I mean, I've had an opportunity to go to Zambia for a few times, specifically to Lusaka. And Davies, I must tell you, like, I went to a radio summit there, and there were people that had started their own stations. They were people from all over the country that had started their own little radio stations. So, you know, is that prevalent? Is that a commonplace thing? I remember I did an interview in somebody's lounge. The windows were open, but they had the mattress pushed up against the door because they thought that was being soundproof. So could you maybe explain just the diverse types of radio stations that are in Zambia, commercial, community, campus radio? Could you break that down?
Yeah, true to your word, there are a lot of radio stations that have sprung up in Zambia. You know, from the time that the airwaves were liberalized, everybody thought that they could own a radio station. So now what people do is that they just buy a transmitter, buy a computer, get in a room, you know, buy a microphone, a little mixer and whatnot, and they're calling it a radio station. So we have categories of radio stations in Zambia. We have the religious radio stations, which are quite limited in terms of how much coverage they're given, just as well as the community radio stations as well. They also have, they're limited as to what coverage they can be given. Then we also have academic radio stations, which are at institutions of learning, such as universities and colleges. And then we also have commercial radio stations, which sector I belong. I happen to be the Secretary General of the Media Owners Association, by the way. And so I know almost all the radio stations that that are operating in Zambia. We also have the public radio stations, which are owned by the government through the Zambia National Broadcasting Corporation. There are quite a few of them. But a lot of radio stations have sprung up and you know, sometimes even the small radio stations that have come up and they have come in the category of commercial, they've come up with their own strategies. You know, the market niches, if you call them that, if you want to call them that, they've come up with their own strategies of trying to niche on the market and get their fair share of the audience. And you'll find that some clients that want to go mass market will actually go to the little guy, and the little guy will even have a very low rate. And so you find that as the big guys will now start suffering, because this guy who wants to target the mass market is using the little guy because the little guy is also targeting the mass market. But as the commercial guys who are targeting specifics, we are suffering because they start comparing the rates. They're like, if I can pay so much with that guy, why should I pay so much with you guys? And so we use the example of a Toyota Corolla and a Bentley. Why would you compare a Toyota Corolla and a Bentley? So if you want the price of a Toyota Corolla, go to Toyota and buy a Corolla. But if you want a Bentley, you want to drive a Bentley, come on, don't come and say Corolla is charging me so much. And so because of that, you know, we retain some respect from certain clients because we want to maintain standards. And even the programming is not the type of programming which is here and there. You know, it has no style, nothing, because you just want to reach the guy at the bottom there. You need to have a specific standard. And so there are clients that want to maintain that as well. But there are clients that say, oh, Our target is the mass market, so we want to go to the little guy. And so, if you want business from us, you need to match the rates of the little guy, which we can't do, unfortunately. Yeah. So this is what is happening. There is now competition between even the community radio stations. Have also now, you know, started claiming their fair share of the market, depending on their reach. So in our case, our strategy has been to unitize our station. That's why we have six broadcast points dotted across the country, so that each unit is able to run independently if there's need. But then there's a network that at some point you run on the network, you're running the same thing. Then during some times you want to target a certain audience, you would use that unit to run different things from what the other units are running. And so that is the strategy that we are currently employing here in Zambia.
If you are watching, make sure that you do send us your questions at the Q&A tab at the bottom, and I'll get to them in just a few moments. Now, so a question I was asked at another Radio Day session, I was put on a panel and somebody asked me this question and I had to think quickly on the spot. So I'm going to put it to you guys. Are there any radio formats or radio structures that we have adopted from Western radio? So whether it's Australian or European or American radio, that we've adopted but maybe don't fit for our region or for our area or for our culture. Can you think of anything, Gary, where, I mean, we do look to the West for inspiration in terms of our promotions, our campaigns, sometimes even our time slots, but have we adopted certain formats or have we adopted certain trends that really don't work for Africa or for your particular region?
I think sometimes the way we day part radio stations doesn't really always translate in a much more informal, you know, for example, drive time radio, it's a different thing when public transport is moving the majority of the people. It's not quite as personal a medium. It's more of a sort of more of broadcasting. It's a different kind of tactic that you can employ. I think sometimes the way we sort of pick genres and formats typically follows. There's been a lot of American consultants floating around Africa, and we find a lot of the very American style approach to formatting and genres that still filter through in a lot of the trainings. I had a very engaging discussion once with an Australian radio station. Thought I was being clever by asking, "What format are you?" And he said, "We're not a format." And I said, "Well, how do you define yourself?" He said, "We ask our listeners what they want and then we give it to them," which I just thought was such a straightforward way to understand programming. And often I think it's in how we're training our staff and how we're thinking about some of the more technical aspects of our programming that filters through. From a broader format perspective, I think formats that don't work don't survive. And so, you know, from a commercial perspective, if no one's listening and advertisers aren't interested, you're probably not going to be around for very long. And so to get your question clear, I think that formats ultimately are self-sufficient when they're successful. And it means if you're around, then there's a reason for your existence.
Yeah, I think sometimes, I mean, we even our time slots, I think even those channels we adopt and we think that they're going to work when actually, in Africa, things work a bit differently. And so it's just about tuning into the behavior of people in our area and in our region. And Jonathan, I mean, when we're thinking about radio in Nigeria, where are you basing or building your foundation on? Is it American type radio? Have you seen different styles? You know, what has worked? What have you found works? And maybe it doesn't work for radio and the formats that you guys have chosen in Nigeria.
First off, when you have a country of 200 million people, it's most likely you would find everybody with wanting, like almost anything you put out, you'd find people who would want to consume it. However, I would say while there are certain formats of radio that have been developed or have been advanced in certain parts of the world. So take, for instance, how you find the Zoo Radio was made famous out of America, but it has become very huge in Australia. You'd find CHR that was pretty much like created in America and has become very huge in England. For us, what we've done is for every format we've tried to do, and we operate in different formats, we first understand that every radio must, for every radio to be successful, it must be local, meaning there must be people that you connect with. Formats are mostly just a means of convenience that we develop for ease of programming. But in terms of reaching the audience, we try to find out what is the USP. So say, for instance, we run two brands that are CHR. But one of the brands, Sound City, for instance, we've made it because Sound City as a brand is a brand that was built and developed in Africa. And part of the goal is to say, look, we'll create something that is contemporary, that is African from a contemporary nature, that tries to be a vanguard of the African pop generation. Many years ago, it wasn't common to find radio stations on the continent that will play 100% music made on the continent. But we've been able to rewrite that narrative. So we operate a CHR, which is essentially certain key ingredients of repetition, the way you arrange the library and all of that. But the music that is played is it's like 90% Nigerian and 10% the top pop songs on the continent. And it's gone off to a very massive acclaim across the country. And we've got demands for it outside of the country. We've got, as I speak to you, we've got a couple of, about few countries wanting, people wanting us to come do Sound City radio stations in those places. So what I've seen is that if you take a straight jacket approach and you do a copy and paste, you are not likely going to get the same answer, the same results. But when you do best practice learnings and you look at what works, humans are humans. They want to have fun. They want to have fun. Fun may just be slightly different in Arusha from how it will most likely be in Bloemfontein. But I think when people just want to have fun, radio is universal in how it caters to people. And I think if you look across the continent, you'll see that the most famous brands are brands that have indigenous feels to it. It's everywhere. I mean, Citizen in Kenya, Ukozi in South Africa. If you go to everywhere in Nigeria, we've got our indigenous brands have got massive offtake. So I think basically that's all. The only thing we're doing is we're looking at there's a crop of new Nigerians, new Africans who what is native to them is not necessarily what is traditional in the sense of being native. And we're looking at that and seeing how daily as people change, then we also change to cater to their needs.
Okay, going to our questions, I've got something for you, Davies. It comes from Mek Piri, who is a radio specialist. And his question says, he wants to know what a lasting solution to nurturing new talent in campus radio. Solution to nurturing new talent, is campus radio station the solution? Oh, okay. So he wants to know, are we nurturing the talent that is coming out of campus radio? And he also wants to know why most stations treat radio badly with no structure. All they do is throw things in a box and hope that magic is structure a problem for radio. Yes. So basically, Mek is asking why radio stations are not treating radio well. They just throw everything in a box and they hope magic comes out. And he also wants to know, when we are nurturing talent, are we looking to campus radio as the solution? So Davies, could you answer that for Mek?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Thanks very much, Mek, for that question or for those questions. To start with the issue of nurturing radio presenters, it's not really supposed to come from campus. In as much as it's a base, it's where to start from. I think exposure is what is really going to give the future presenters what they need to be. If they're going to be good presenters, they need to be exposed to what is already trending, the good presenters that we already have. I mean, if Claire is one of the brilliant presenters that we have, she needs to have people following her to say that she's my role model. And that's when you're going to have people or presenters, you know, developing good skills. But if they're going to campus to go and learn how to be a good presenter, or they'll go to a campus radio. I've listened to a lot of campus radio stations, and understandably so, they are students. But rarely have I really heard a very good radio presenter on a campus radio, because they do it as part-time, they do it for fun. So they're not really training to be good presenters. And I don't think they're really exposed to, to the modern trends in presenting on radio. So I think exposure is one key area, and conferences and workshops like this, where you bring people that are already good at it. That's the way to go. That's what will help the presenters, develop a good skill, and not just being on campus radio or being in a class and learning how to do it. I don't think that is going to do it. The other issue of having radio stations, with no structure whatsoever, that's one problem that we seem to be grappling with in Zambia. And one of the things that we've been trying to address as Media Owners Association is to bring some form of sanity in the industry. You find a radio station that has no programming whatsoever. They just throw anything, that they want to throw. And unfortunately, or is it fortunately for them, they have an audience. The people that just like anything that is thrown at them, and they have an audience. And you find that a lot of stations that are actually targeting the mass markets are culprits. They are the ones that usually are just throwing everything in a box and hoping, things just come out. And luckily, so somehow, there are some stations that have gotten away with it. So it's a mess that needs to be cleaned up. There has to be some industry standards, some industry practice. And if we come together as a continent and set up some standards which we can apply from Nigeria, I mean, Jonathan is giving us some very good lessons. Maybe we can try and help the guys that just throw things in a box, like what Mek is saying.
Thank you so much, Davies. Gary, you had your hand up.
Yes, thanks, Claire. I do think, however, that campus radio plays a vital role in the long-term future of commercial radio, especially in an African context. Typically, we have big major market stations that require an ongoing level of talent coming in. So in my previous role, we had agreements with both university campus stations in our city, where we were able to place talent we thought would be developed but needed hours behind the microphone. And in return for the campus radio stations giving access to the talent we identified, we provided training programs for the broader talent, because out of every 20 people that get onto campus radio, one probably winds up in professional radio, but that is typically the person who desperately wants to be there and will work hard. And in a commercial sense, it's hard to pick someone from the reserve team straight into the first team, or someone from school straight into the first team. So campus radio, I think, plays an important role in the development of talent for radio. And I think commercial radio, if there is a definite strategy to develop talent hand in hand with campus radio stations, typically because their survival isn't dependent on selling adverts. Their survival is dependent on being efficient and sort of fitting the role of what students are looking for. And I think there's a very nice synergy there if it's explored.
Thank you so much, Gary. I know we have a voice note, so if we could play that voice note before we close off.
Good day, Radio Days Africa team, the panelists and all the attendees who are there. So this is Tumelo in Botswana, and I wanted to ask the difference between a commercial-owned radio and a public-owned radio. Like, in terms of the content that we hear, how does it differ from one radio to another? And I want to know if the content has to really be different from those two private and public owned radio stations.
Thank you so much for that voice note. I'm going to ask Gary to take this quickly, if you can keep it brief.
So I think the public broadcasting space is an essential element. There's a lot of things that commercial broadcasters simply won't do because they're not profitable, but that doesn't mean they're not needed to be done. And I think the critical element to understand is that in the public broadcasting space, you are dealing with a number of not sexy items. And this would be things like education, medicine, politics, providing platforms for people to speak. Typically, kids programming plays a big role in an African context. So there's a lot of reasons for public radio to be an important part of our lives. And you know, there is a space for both to develop and thrive.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. We've come to the end of the session. This was fantastic. This was Africa. Hello, Africa. Tell me how you're doing. Thank you so much to Davies, Kabuse. I really appreciate your time. Gary Struble, Blero, Kajam, and Jonathan. Thank you so much, all of you. And if you haven't, make sure you do register for more Radio Days Africa sessions. My name is Clemawisa, and this has been fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining this Radio Days Africa session. Click to watch or download the podcast. Radio. That was a Radio Days Africa podcast brought to you by the Wits Radio Academy.